I can choose to be that guy. I can choose to be that mess. I can choose to, you know, to throw all accountability and connection out the window and just be completely self-centered and completely wrong in my life. And then I can go, well, you know, it's because of this, what happened to me as a kid. It's really not my fault. And it is, right? That's not, it's not an excuse. It's a reason. But I am what I choose to become now. You know, like I can take responsibility for going, okay, some bad shit happened to me when I was a kid. As a result of that, I did some bad shit to other people and myself. And now I'm taking responsibility for that middle part, not the first bit. That I'm a child. That's not my fault.
Yeah.
But I can take responsibility for the chaos.
To reason with someone is to motivate them to do or accept topics, ideas, and issues through discussion and having conversations.
This podcast is about the relationship with ourself and the relationship with others, finding our stability in our self-worth, and how do we actually be in healthy relationships. We find this out through connection, compassion, and communication. Reach out, connect with me, like, subscribe, comment. I want to unpack whatever it is that we can to really get to the nitty and gritty of finding out how do we get better in ourselves and how do we get better in our relationships.
Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. Nick Bowditch is a successful and unsuccessful entrepreneur and motivational speaker, trauma and addictions therapist, and best-selling author. He has survived the corporate world, escaped the startup world, was lured back into the corporate world to manage small business and startup operations at both Facebook and then at Twitter, and is now again working for himself as both a therapist and a motivational speaker all over Australia and internationally. You can find him at nickbowditch.com or at Nick Bowditch across all the socials. I'm super pumped for this one. I get along really well with Nick, so this is a fun, nice chat about getting real, and I hope you enjoy it.
All right. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. I have in front of me Nick. Really happy to see you and meet you.
I'm glad you're here. Very happy to do this, mate. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I don't really know how we stumbled across each other, but we ended up following each other on Instagram, and then yeah, just reached out a little bit more, and here we are doing this.
Yeah, that's where all good things start, on Instagram, mate.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been so many people on the podcast from just some nice Instagram connection. So it's super good. So let's jump in. Tell me, who the hell are you and what do you do?
Yeah, so my name is Nick Bowditch. I have sort of two jobs or two lives. So one of my lives is I work as a motivational speaker. So I speak at different conferences and stuff, mostly around trauma and addiction and self-talk for corporate audiences mostly. So that's sort of one side, and the other side is my therapy. And the other side is my therapy business, where I work mostly with people who are trying to escape active addiction or who are in very early recovery, and people who have unresolved childhood trauma or both, which they often come together, as you know. So that's my sweet spot. So that's what I do, and the people I do it with. My audience is primarily people who are about 25 to 55, who are just sort of coming into that phase of their life where they're like, okay, something's got to give, something's got to change. Mm-hmm. And they're at that pre-contemplative sort of thing. So there I am. And then we pick some scabs off and try to put a few back on.
Yeah. And I love that. And always go, how the hell did you end up in trauma and addiction? Because it's an interesting path for everyone to find themselves in. But I would love to hear how it is you ended up motivational speaking about that sort of thing and, helping people in that early recovery of it all.
Yeah. So I lived in active addiction for a long time. And I live now still with complex PTSD resulting from some childhood trauma. So that all sort of came to a head in about 7 years ago now, where I ended up in rehab in just trying to sort my life out, which had fallen apart because of those two things.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of gave me a new life, but it also gave me a new focus in my new life, and that was to try and understand myself better by trying to understand other people better, and which led to me doing counseling qualifications, and now I'm working towards my PhD in psych, which I should finish hopefully by the time I die of natural causes, because it's still a long way off. And so that's kind of I'm a result of the work, really. Both doing it on myself and sitting through it in other people and holding their space as well.
Result of the work. I love that. I'm a result of the work too. is beautiful, man. And that path for you, and what I like is continues to be a path, right? Constant looking at you.
Yep. Every time I think, okay, well, we don't have to look at me anymore. the universe goes, no, what about this? And it reminds me of something. I'm a work in progress, mate. I sort of don't buy into. So there's kind of a traditional thinking, teaching around addiction that, you know, you're in it and it's you forever. And you'll only be in recovery from that, but it's just waiting to take back over your life. And that's not something that I hold to. I talk about having been in addiction and having been an addict. But if this is only what works for me, if I say that I'm still an addict or whatever, then I'm just a bit too much closer to it than it is actually true. You know, I'm nowhere near that. I try to, rather than be a different version of sick, I'm trying to be well. So,
yeah. Quite, you're throwing some nice bombs already. I like that. I really like that. And look, I think I agree in that way. I think what I hear is maybe a little bit aligned with it is, that doesn't mean it can't come back and slap me in the face and I end up right back in there. And I think that's the universe when it slaps you around. It says, hey, there's still some shit to work on, because if we're not careful, then we'll end up there. That doesn't necessarily mean.
I agree. But I think it's more my trauma is that constant.
Yeah.
Presence, that constant risk, as opposed to my addiction. Now, I know that's not for everybody. I'm just talking about myself, and that's how I see that. Like I feel like I deal with my trauma every day, but I haven't felt like I have to deal with past addictions for a long time. So that's the distance I want to put between that. I know that if I disappeared back into active addiction, then I'm dead. It's over for me. I had my last chance kind of thing and I took it. So I know that I'm not going back there.
Yeah.
I know that. So.
Well, like you said, you'll die.
Hope I know that.
Yeah. Touch wood, hey. Well, you put the work in and I think that's it. There's a lot of different theories and I guess controversial opinions around the addiction side of things. But I think, you know, the king, as is Gabor Mate, would say a lot of really profound stuff that I think really has shaped the way that we see it now, is kind of that idea that we, you know, not every single traumatized person is going to become addicted to drugs or alcohol or sex or gambling or any process addictions, but every person in addiction has potentially some of that past experience, painful experience, yep. and potentially, you know, that adversity, whether it be childhood or not, but those traumatic experiences. Yeah. And that's
I just don't think it's something you put your hand up for voluntarily, you know, like no one wakes up and goes, fuck it, I'm just going to become addicted to meth today. Like it's a result of a whole lot of moving parts that are beyond our control. I think anyway.
Yeah. And I think that stuff that gets triggered now, it's like, yeah, it is those wounds or trauma. That's definitely what it is to me. And that in succession or the repeated of that, then that's going to potentially bring back this like need to run from it in different ways or old ways or those behaviors coming back up. So yeah, is that kind of what you're saying? That's kind of how it works for you too.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think people have an addictive personality? Do you think that's a real thing?
Nah, not really. It gets thrown around so much, so often that I stop challenging it with everyone. Cause when I hear it, I go, I want to kind of discuss it. Right. But, I choose my battles with some of that stuff, but no, I don't think we do.
Oh, you are much better controlled than me, mate. I can't not bite at that.
How would you describe it? I'd love to hear what your elevator pitch is for the challenge of addictive personalities.
I just always think it's either somebody justifying their own bad behavior, right? Or it's the voice of someone in their life trying to justify their role in their life of an addict, right? But for me, I just think it's just way too simple. I don't think there is an addictive personality. I think it's much more complex than that. And to say, oh, you know, I just, and you know, I used to say in rehab and in early recovery, I would say, you know, it was always that way for me. It was jelly beans or it was cake or it was, you know, stuff when I was a kid. But no, I just enjoyed sugar and I just love cake. I still do, right? And that doesn't mean I'm going to turn into a meth addict. It just, you know, I always liked excess. I always liked risk and intensity. So I guess if you extrapolate that out, yeah, I guess that's part of my personality. But I just don't believe that people are predisposed to addiction. When we just decided that the majority of people who are addicts have a trauma history. So it doesn't matter what they're predisposed to, unless they're predisposed to trauma.
Yeah. And it gets so complex because when we look at even the genetics of things, it's like, I mean, what's getting passed down is what we're finding now isn't just these things. It's like the epigenetics of it all. And it's like what's being passed down is fear in some families or intergenerationally. So like we can go, well, it's that then we cope. And if we cope and that's what we see and that's what we learn, then we ended up doing it. But we then rely on it. It must have been a genetic predisposition or that sort of thing. It's like, nah, I don't buy it. I think there's too many moving parts.
Yeah. I think you're predisposed to being in a family that doesn't talk about shit, maybe, and a family that doesn't express feelings in the right way. That's a predisposition you can't do much about sometimes. But I just think it's way too simplistic to go, oh, well, that's my addictive personality, you know. Like, come on, man. Yeah. Like, take some responsibility too, you know. It's anyway, it's a bit of a trigger with me, mate. So yeah, there you go. We've uncovered
I'm glad let's air out some more of your triggers. I think it's cool because it makes a really good conversation. And I bet you there's people listening that are like, yeah, I've got an addictive personality, and just not been questioned in some of that. And I think get reflective, have a little think about what does that actually mean? Was I born with an addictive personality? How is that?
That's interesting. So yeah, because the other thing I think is it some people who will say that to me, some of my clients will say, you know, I just got this addictive personality. I can't, you know, and I say, oh, so well, we won't worry about trying to you know, fix that or find out why or whatever. It's just the way it is, you know. And they're like, oh, no, no, no. I'm like, well, dude, you can't have it both ways. You can't go, oh, well, you know, there's that old addictive personality, you know. Like, it's,
yeah,
if you're not prepared to do the work, don't accept the lottery, you know.
Yeah. Still, well, yeah, it can be that cop out, right? And I did. I think that's where the challenge comes in. And we learn that as well. I think that's kind of addictive. It's like finding a different excuse for shit, justifying our behavior. Yeah. That could be very addictive. But yeah, you wouldn't say, like, I want you to change your personality to many people.
Mm.
So it's like, well, I guess you're stuck being addictive then.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. We tried. Here's your money back, you know.
Yeah. So what?
So, yeah.
In terms of recovery for you, if we take a little sidestep, it's like, yeah, I mean, this is the space is all about connection and self-worth. And I guess, when was it that you made that shift? Because I think this is something that people kind of go up against, is like, they think it's the substance, or they think it's the thing itself. And we all kind of have, like, if we have a drug of choice or drink of choice, or whether it's sex or whatever the hell our thing is, our vice is when did you start to link the fact that it had a lot more to do with how I felt about me and how I was sort of showing up in the world?
I can confidently say that I didn't make that connection until everything else had fallen away, until I had destroyed everything else.
Yeah.
With chaos. And even then, you know, even my first stint at rehab, where I just fucked around the whole time and didn't, just fought it the whole time, didn't really take it very seriously, you know, and I was still butting up against it, just going, this addictive personality, you know, and I've got all this stuff, and it's not my fault, and it's everyone else's fault. And, you know, if everyone just helped me, I'd be okay, you know. And not once making that connection. Mm. Not once. I can honestly tell you, mate, it was the second stint at rehab where I was like, well, actually, you know, it's me. Like, I can't blame other people for their responses to my shittiness.
Mm.
Like, you know, if I wasn't shitty, they wouldn't have responded that way, and I wouldn't be here. You know, like, so I think it's, you know, you talk about the connection and self-love being very similar ideas. I wasn't connected to myself. I certainly didn't love myself.
Mm.
And without that connection, you can't, I don't think, I wasn't able to love anyone else properly or be connected to anyone else properly.
Mm.
Because I was just a sneaky motherfucker trying to get away with shit and trying to hide what had happened to me and trying to, and when I was caught out at whatever, just to sink straight into the excuse, well, you know, fuck, it's your fault. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's their fault. It's their fault. Mm. It was never my fault.
Yeah, right.
Ever. And, I mean, some of it wasn't, but, like,
yeah,
this much, you know, like, right, you know, but.
Yeah. Mm. I think that's where that shift starts to happen, and it doesn't happen for everybody, where I am still responsible for the things that I do with what's going on around me. You know, despite what we've kind of been through, there's an accountability and responsibility to certain things. Would you kind of agree with that?
Yep, I do. I mean, I love the Carl Jung quote, you know, I'm not what happened to me, I'm what I choose to become. And I think about that all the time. It's on my fridge. Like, I literally think about it all the time, because I can choose to be that guy. I can choose to be that mess. I can choose to, you know, to throw all accountability and connection out the window and just be completely self-centered and completely wrong in my life. And then I can go, well, you know, it's because of this, what happened to me as a kid. It's really not my fault. And it is, right? It's not an excuse. It's a reason.
Mm.
But I am what I choose to become now. You know, like I can take responsibility for going, okay, some bad shit happened to me when I was a kid. As a result of that, I did some bad shit to other people and myself.
Mm.
And now I'm taking responsibility for that middle part, not the first bit, that I'm a child. That's not yeah. my fault.
Yeah.
But I can take responsibility for the chaos and make amends where I can, which isn't always easy or warranted by people. And then, yeah, just try to get on with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's probably one of my favorite quotes as well. It's very similar. You can't change where you come from, but you can change where you go from here. And I say that all the time too, right? Because that's the only part we can control. And even that's hard enough. So if we're trying to control what's happened, yeah, we're in trouble. We're in trouble.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, because that's the thing, like, I think a lot, and we might have been taught this by the same teachers in the same philosophy, and I think a lot about depression, my depression being everything back there and my anxiety being everything down there. And so if I'm here and here in this moment, in this second, every second, then I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I get back there, it's really shit. And over here, it's going to be shit, mm-hmm. you know, in my mind. So I've got to just try and go, oh, I'm just going to stay in the
present. Yeah, which is hard, man. It's hard staying in that middle because there's just so much chaos if we're not careful. And it's going to keep coming. That's life. So, yeah, how the hell do you stay being able to just be in that as best as you can? We'll come back when you do sleep.
First of all, I didn't say I was able to for a start. That's my plan, not the...
That's what the aim is.
Yeah, that's the goal. No, well, I do try and... Because when I think about it, right, the present moment, even though it's hard to stay in it, hard to be in it, I'm sort of become a bit of a ninja at meditation. That helps a lot. Whereas I used to be really shit at that, and I've worked it out in some ways for me now. But the present moment is where there's no pain for me either.
Okay.
So my pain is all just back there or just over there, past or future, depression or anxiety. But if I stay here, I'm all right. If I stay here, I haven't lied to anyone. I haven't let anyone down. I haven't hurt anyone. I haven't hurt myself. I haven't used, I haven't, you know, all of that. And each present moment is like that. But if I get too far forward, then I will. If I get too far back, I'm like, well, you're a piece of shit and why wouldn't you?
Mm.
So the plan for me is to stay in the middle. The plan, mate. Not always the reality.
Emphasis on plan. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I haven't worked that out yet, mate. I haven't worked out a permanent fixture for that yet.
You let me know when you do, and I'd love to collab on the book because we'd make millions. Buddy.
Bugger the book, mate. I'll be off to live my own life in peace. Don't worry.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Won't see me for dust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of books, good segue, me. You wrote this best-selling book.
Oh man,
tell me.
I did. So I've written a few books. One of them did well. One of them did real well. So
Sweet.
It's called Reboot Your Thinking. It's basically a 28-day programmatic thing, a workbook,
right?
That is based on the 28 days that I repeated over and over and over again in early recovery to try and keep myself clean for a start. and less affected by trauma and intrusive thoughts and bad shit. So yeah, and it just became something that a lot of other people who are like me and in that similar place kind of attached to. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's been good. It's a good, really good business card, you know, that book. For me, it's a good way for people to find my speaking as well as my working directly with them. But it was really hard. It was really hard to write some of that stuff that I'd never said.
Yeah,
out loud, okay. Far less written down and put into the world, you know.
So it's just kind of like little stories and moments and experiences of each of those 28 days, trial and error, failing, and what the relapse is.
So each day has a different theme, you know. Right. So it might be pain, fear, shame, fun, you know, forgiveness, different ideas, you know, each day. And I'd be kind of writing a lot on each of those days about that. So in a journal, you know, okay, what am I going to focus on today? I'm going to focus on shame, you know, make a shame list of things, like an inventory of things that I feel shame about. Is that, are these things my fault? Can I change them? All that sort of stuff. And then I would park it and then go to the next day, whatever that was. But in writing the book, I knew it was important first to start it. The first chapter is hectic. Like I've spoken to a lot of people who have bought the book or listened to the book, me reading the book, you know, on Audible or whatever, and haven't got past the first chapter because it's graphic.
Yeah.
About my trauma and the reasons and all that. And yeah, it's hard. It's hard listening. It's hard reading. It was hard writing.
I bet. It's hard living, but, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that is, but the experience of doing it, of doing the rehab process with other people, who are all similar, you know, going through, not all the same, but all going through similar sort of shit and hard things, made that a lot easier. And every time I talk about it, it's easier. It's never easy talking about your dark hidden shame.
Yeah.
But it's easier every time, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now you're sharing that light with a lot of other people so that they can start that sharing journey too, which is amazing. It sounds like that book has hit home for those that can get past chapter one and the clients that you're seeing getting some of that recovery. So what's that part like for you? I mean, being someone that was fucking living it and probably never thought that you would be doing what you're doing now.
No, it's this curious mix of horrible imposter syndrome, embarrassing shame and self-worth shit, and pride.
Yeah.
Weirdly in the mix there somewhere, you know. And the more I talk about it, the more I realize, like, and I know you're the same. I don't want my therapist to be sorted, to be fixed, whatever that means, you know, or to not have the story or to not have the struggle. You know, I don't want that. Yeah. I want my guy or girl to be able to go, well, I can't relate exactly to your situation, but here's mine, and. Mm-hmm. I get you, you know. And I've had a lot of people who haven't been in therapy and haven't wanted me to be their therapist have said to me things like, how can you, why do you do this when you're obviously so fucked yourself? Like, I've read the book, you're fucked, you know, sort of thing. and I'm always like, well, yeah. I mean, that just proves to me that they're never going to be my client, you know.
Yeah.
Because I've had an equal amount of people go, the only reason I'm sitting here having therapy with you, dude, is because of that book or because of that YouTube video where you talk about your whatever, you know, like, that's the only reason people come to me sometimes. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone wants a sorted therapist. Well, maybe they do, but I don't.
Well, they've found ways that work to sort some things, I guess. But they've...
Maybe.
I mean, the thing I like about you and why you're on here, and because what I pride myself on, is that everybody else is taken. This is just me. You know, I'm authentic and I'm genuine and I try to be me. And that's what I want to share. And I fuck up all the time. And I own that.
Yeah.
Sometimes I don't want to own it either. So I want people like that on here, but I also want people like that to keep connecting. And yeah, my therapist is not someone that necessarily, she probably has much stronger boundaries, and or that's just not her style, is necessarily to fully share in her own way. But we connect in the way that I know she's been through emotional shit, whatever that needs to be. Her story is never going to be the same as mine. My story is never going to be the same as yours, Nick, but I know what shame looks like and I know what pain is. And I know those emotions to like the nth degree. So I can feel you on that, you know? That's what I like.
I wonder, mate, if anyone does our work, if anyone does our work who doesn't have the story, yeah. A story, a version of a story. I mean, why else would they? Like nobody, you know, I don't think anyone thinks one day, I've had this perfect dreamy life, you know, where nothing ever has happened to me. And it's been so perfect and sunshine and lollipops. And so what I might do all day is just talk to people who are, you know, really struggling with their mental health. And
yeah.
Like, these aren't not the path, you know.
Yeah. That is true. That is true. And I always say that. I said, we're all here for a reason. One of the most intense therapy sessions that I had was finding out why I'm actually a therapist, you know, what I thought was, you know, looking after, I have always wanted to help people is what I've always told everybody. And then realizing I needed a lot more than what I got. And I've always loved helping people because that makes me feel good about myself. And now I'm a therapist, you know, blew my mind, dude. Oh shit. I almost quit that day. I was like, that's just, I'm bad, I'm wrong. And I go, that's my shame. And then I was like, how can I find a place where I can do this? And how can I be codependent in a really healthy way, essentially?
Yeah, yeah. I think I might be able to make you feel a bit better because I do it not for that reason. I don't get a kick out of helping other people. I'm not a sociopath either. I'm doing it for me. So we're like the two opposite ends of the thing, right? You're the massive codependent who wants to do it for someone else. I'm the selfish narcissist who wants to do it for me. But whatever, we're still doing it for a right reason. So,
hey, look, yeah. I've just literally been talking in a couple of recent podcasts. It's the same side. It's the different side of the same coin. All narcissists and codependents, anyway. So. I think it all comes back out in the wash regardless. And look, you know, at the end of the day, the codependency really is about making sure I'm safe and I'm worthy and I'm good enough. So it is for me at the end of the day. Yeah. It's just helping me stay sane.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Safety. It's a safety net, right? That's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. You just learn to live with the good, nice balance of it all, and then it works out. We're probably going to lose all our clients after this episode, Nick.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. Like, my clients are going to watch this and go, what the hell? What? although we might actually attract a whole new lot of people who are like, oh, these are my guys. These are my guys.
That's true. That's true. All right, cool. Well, we can bring it back from here. Let's fucking bring it home, Nick. So what – tell me something compassionate and empathetic. What is the best part about the work that you do in people's journeys that are getting well?
I'll tell you it's an unexpected one for me, but it's when – somebody says something to me in session that I know is the first time they've ever said it out loud. So not just that I'm the only person they've told, but that they haven't themselves ever said that word, those words, that phrase. I do get a kick out of that when you can see in someone they're like, and you see their kind of posture change and a huge thing has been taken off the top of them, you know, like I love that.
Yeah.
I love it when someone honors me with their vulnerability in that therapy space. I fucking love that. Like that's a great buzz for me. Yeah, that's probably one of the main ones for me. Just the honesty. Like as someone who, you know, I used to lie for Australia, you know, like I would tell lies when the truth would do, you know, and just for, I don't even know why. And so when I can sit with someone in a space and, you know, I had a session today with somebody and I was saying to them, it doesn't matter. Like if this is the only hour this week where you're honest, then that's one. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm the only person on earth who you're honest with, then that's one. And one is a whole lot better than fucking none.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that like people take their first steps with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. No, that's really powerful.
Do you think that's got people back on side?
Yeah. That'll get you a few likes and subscribes, I'm sure. I'm done for. People are going to have to listen to the other episodes, otherwise I might lose some traction. No, I think this is it. This is why I really like you, Nick, man. I think this is the raw and honest component of living and life and doing this alongside it all, right? And
Yeah.
It's authentic, man. It's like we're in recovery and this is what we do with that time, which helps us stay in recovery and people getting really, really well from it. And I know that you've touched a lot of hearts and minds by them being able to get to a point where they can be honest with you. And that's an incredibly powerful place to get someone to.
Yeah, honesty is so real. Honesty is so rare in people, and I always think it's such a shame that somebody is only really honest with us, who is in their life perhaps a stranger. You know, they've got all these people around them in their life who love them and who they love, who just don't know them, don't know the stuff that we know about them.
Yeah.
But again, one is better than zero.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's so true. And I really connect a lot with that. And I think that's probably my answer, is it just when there's that drop in moment of, oh, this is connection. You know, it's like that moment where I'm like, we're not just talking about each other's feelings. We're not just sharing difficult, honest, raw stuff. It's like, this moment becomes this moment. I literally had goosebumps even just saying that out loud, right? Like it's a moment you can't quite get all the time. And if life was like that with everyone, we'd be fucking all so great. But it's that rarity that when you can drop into that, man, that's my favorite part about this work and just really connected, conscious people being able to have those things, like we're kind of having moments of now, right? So,
yeah,
that's my favorite.
Ah, it's the best, man. It's the best. And I, you know, I think some people don't do that in their job. Some people never connect with somebody, or most people never connect with people the way that we do. And it might just be for 45 minutes or whatever, but at least, you know, I mean, it benefits us both, right? And it benefits them, and I'm with you. If that's how the world worked, then humans would just be operating at the most optimal vibration ever. Like, you know, like we'd just be weapons.
So this is a big question. I'm gonna just shoot an answer. You see how we go. But the the way to kind of do that. I mean, the opposite of addiction is connection, right? And I think that so many people, not just in addiction, but in it definitely, is that we're going to get each other through if we come together and can get vulnerable, can get honest, like you're saying. So what do you think some of that takes for people to get more of, get more connected, get more into that space where we can create better people?
I think on one hand, it's honesty, right? It's honesty from person A, but it's also a lack of judgment from person B.
Mm.
And person B has inherited our parents, our grandparents, their parents, all of that shit that says traditionally, when you say that to me, I say this to you. Or when you say that to me, I feel this. Or when you say this to me, I tell you what you have to do to fix that.
Mm.
So that's not connection. That's fucking lecturing. That's crap. Right, as soon as we get into advice, we're buggered. And and I don't know. I've got a good sense about you, but I don't give advice. Even though my clients would love it if I just gave them advice. If I just said to them, "No, this is what you got to do today," then you know. But then they're just living my life. Then they're just making my decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, to answer your question, I think the opposite of addiction is connection. The way that connection would work better is the first person to be honest with themselves and others, but mostly with themselves, and the person they're trying to connect to, not to do everything in their power not to connect, you know, to lecture, to not be empathic, to not accept, to be judgy. A lot of that's just the human condition at the moment, you know. So we'll get there. Like I honestly reckon my kids are 9 to 14, right, in that age group, and I reckon their kids will be fucking superhumans, because my kids are the generation that says, "I'm sorry," and says, "I love you," and says, "I'm angry," and says, you know, what they're actually feeling instead of being told, "Oi, oi, oi, don't fucking say that stuff out loud," right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've already seen how good my kids are with that. So their kids, I mean, they won't need therapy, mate. You know, not just because they're my grandkids. I just think the whole generation will be like, "Actually, we're sorted. Thanks." You know? Well, you know, they're so maligned as being snowflakes and all that, but they're going to be the best humans ever, mate.
Man, that's exciting. Hey, I think that's really cool too. But yeah, we're getting there. And I think this is honesty. I love that answer. I think the honesty and this ability to be able to be seen in that and heard in that honesty, and they actually take that connection, is where we're going to see a lot of powerful change on top of what we're already kind of seeing. Sweet.
Don't you reckon though, but don't you reckon the further proof of we're getting there is that two blokes working as therapists are on a podcast talking about feelings and shit, and that some other blokes are going to watch this. Like,
yeah.
my dad's mates be like, "What the fuck is this? Like, I'm not doing this. I'm not telling you how I'm feeling. I'm certainly not going to listen to two blokes who talk to people about their feelings all day now tell me about theirs. Forget it."
Yeah.
You know, but here we are.
Yeah, we're living proof, man. I do like that. And this is the whole point of this, is like, let's have some of that out there. And yeah, man, I love meeting male therapists, because we need more of that soft, compassion, assertive, sometimes all the other shit in the middle to come out, right? I think that it's really, really needed.
Yeah.
For sure. And that's why I really, you're right, this is living proof of it. And I think that's the best that we are able to do stuff like this and spread more of our controversial messages.
Oh, funny. Lose more of our client base the longer we talk.
Yeah. Oh, no. But so, like, if they ever want to reach out to you. Let me start that again. If anyone is.
For the seven people who are still listening.
Yeah. No one's dropped off yet. Where can people find you, Nick? Because I really like what you have to offer, and I love the things that you're doing, man. And I would love for others to be able to know what's that looking like, what's going on for you at the moment. Where can people find you?
It's very kind of you, mate. So you could just go nickbowditch.com. You can Google me or whatever, or just at Nick Bowditch across all the socials, and you'll find me there.
All right, awesome. And what's anything up and coming in the works soon? For the big man?
Not really. I've just started some free groups. I'm not really a group guy, so I've just sort of started to dip my toe in that a little bit. But other than that, mate, just trying to get by, just trying to get through the week so I can watch my kids play soccer and footy on the weekends and try and get some balance in our life. It's kind of ironic that you and I are talking to people about balance in their life, and here we are at the end of the working day doing this. More work, still at work, but yeah, that's all I'm trying to do, mate. I've got nothing really big coming. Just trying to do the do,
man. And you living the way that you want to live, and I appreciate that. But I will put everything up there regardless, because yeah, and it means we can always figure out how do we do this, more of this, if people like it, we could figure out how we come together, which I'd love. So I'll put all that stuff up, and hopefully people got a little bit out of this. Is there anything you'd like to say, like final message of people listening in recovery right now, people kind of early into that, people that are, you know, losing a bit of hope, feeling a little powerless?
If you share something of yourself really honestly, and you're sharing it with love and trying to connect with someone, and that person's showing you that they're not the person to listen, then listen to that the first time. Don't keep trying. Find someone who will listen, because there's plenty of people who will listen and not judge you. But if you're trying to bang your head against the wall, trying to convince someone to change, they ain't going to change.
Whew, love that. Bring it home, Nick. I really appreciate you coming on, man. Can't wait to keep connecting with you moving forward. I appreciate it.
All right, mate. Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
You want to find out more about how therapy can help you kick some goals? Go check out findreasontherapy.com.au or the Find Reason Therapy Instagram page.